Let's sign in.
Okay, with that, board, I believe we're ready. Okay. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this May 1st, 2012. Happy May Day to everyone. You're all bright and shiny and so forth. The first order of business then is the Pledge of Allegiance. Please join the board as we honor our nation.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Next item is the consideration of minutes of 4-24-12.
Move approval.
Second.
Been moved and second. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Minutes are approved. The next item is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the audience to address the board regarding a topic on today's agenda. Is there anyone that wanted to address the board regarding a topic on today's agenda? Okay, seeing no one, then we will move on. No public hearing, and then our first item under additional items is consideration of Resolution 1288, a transfer of Drainage District Lafayette 106 to the City of Story City. Scott Wall, our drainage clerk, and I understand we probably may have a few members from Story City who may wish to comment, so we will certainly allow you an opportunity if you so desire. Okay, Scott.
Okay. What's going on here is the Code of Iowa allows the Board of Supervisors who typically act as drainage district trustees in drainage district matters to transfer administrative control of drainage districts to a city if that district or those districts have at least 25% of their area within the corporate limits of the city. Back in March 20th, we had a meeting to consider nine districts that met that criteria, and that was narrowed down to five or six. At any rate, there are two of them are in Story City. The first one being Lafayette 106. It has 62% of its area within the city. The reason for the transfer of control is just that typically with these districts in the cities, when city residents have an issue with drainage, the first place to go is the city. And if it's a district, then the city calls us. And rather than have the residents go around and around, you know, through the city, through us, through all these various departments, it seems to the supervisors that it would be more of an issue of local control, that the residents could go to their city and get a problem taken care of right there with the people that they know a little more immediately.
Got to just make sure we're clear. It doesn't change the funding of it. Drainage district issues are still paid by the residents of the drainage district. Doesn't change the administration of it. You come with any drainage district. This is simply a matter of who makes the decisions of what's happening in drainage district.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, the district trustees, they administer the district. The funds are handled through the auditor's office. All the bills come to the auditor's office. The monies are collected by the treasurer. So the only change is that the city would administer the district rather than the Board of Supervisors. As Rick said, I'd still be there at the auditor's office. We can answer any questions. We'd take care of the funding. The city would just send the bills to us rather than the way it works now where the county engineer sends the bills to us, to the district.
And I know for these two districts, Scott, you and I went and met with the engineer and city manager of Story City. I didn't know if you had heard anything back after that meeting or
nope.
There was anything to report here.
Okay. First of all, I think, Scott, appreciate, again, bringing this back at this time. Early on in the process, we did hold a public hearing when we laid out the concept of what the board was contemplating of looking at transferring the various districts. At that time, we had opportunities to hear from various cities and communities regarding this proposal, and now we're at the stage of trying to determine and taking final action. I would certainly like to recognize City Manager Mark Jackson from Story City here, who is present. Mark, as always, welcome. You certainly would be allowed to make any statement if you'd like to make any. I believe you are familiar with what we're trying to do, and I do appreciate you meeting with Scott and Rick regarding this so that we're all on the same page. So, okay, is there anyone else that wanted to speak, you know, residents of Story City that might be present that I'm not aware of? Okay. All right. Okay, thank you.
I would move approval of Resolution 1288, transferring Drainage District Lafayette Number 106 to the City of Story City.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve Resolution 1288, the transfer of the Drainage District Lafayette 106 to the City of Story City. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call. Toot.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton. Aye. Resolution 1288 is adopted. Okay. Okay, then moving on to consideration of Resolution 1289, which is the transfer of Drainage District Story City Number 53 to the City of Story City. Again, Trustee Scott, Drainage Clerk.
Pretty much everything I said already applies. This is the same situation. In this case, 37% of the area of the district is within the city limits. All of the tile in this district is within the city limits, which is not the case with the earlier one. And in fact, it was this district, issues with this district and a district in Ames that kind of brought this whole discussion to the fore.
Okay. Any other comments, questions for Scott? Okay. Again, as before, if there's any members of the public that wants to address the board regarding this transfer prior to any action. Okay, seeing none, board, I would entertain a motion.
I'd move approval of Resolution 1289, transferring Drainage District Story City Number 53 to the City of Story City.
Second.
Been moved and seconded the approval of the transfer of Resolution 1289, which will be the transfer of Drainage District to Story City Number 53 to Story City. Any further comments? Hearing none, roll call. Toot.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton. Aye. Resolution 1289 is adopted. Okay.
Thank you, Scott.
Okay, moving on to item number four, consideration and action regarding additional FY12 appropriations. Assistant Auditor Lisa Markley. Let me just preface just a little comment. I worked on this really long and hard. I probably had about 8 or 9 drafts on my opening statement. But the budgeting process is the process that the Board of Supervisors lays out with department heads and elected offices as we prepare the budget for whatever the calendar year that we're basically dealing with. This is open to the public. This is an opportunity where we actually take a look at the priorities that are laid out by the various departments, and they get the opportunity, we as a board get an opportunity to try to convey to them where we think we are in terms of dollars that we will be able to appropriate during the course of the year. This is a give-and-take opportunity. It is an opportunity that elected officials and department heads engage quite heavily with the board regarding the needs in their particular area. I would have to say beyond a doubt, nobody gets everything they want. There's always some adjustments that are usually made, and the board is very appreciative of that. What I would like to say is that at late last fall, just like we've done in previous years, the board decided not to appropriate the full 100% to the various departments and elected offices. I believe we started out initially with the idea of 50%, and then later in the year, the question we debated whether to appropriate the remaining 50% or hold back 5%. And at that time, the decision was made to appropriate only 45% of the remaining budget to elected offices and departments. The purpose today before us, as we come to the close of the fiscal year, is to kind of get a handle as to where we are with the various dollars, looking at departments in terms of your needs. The board certainly has identified and recognizes that previously unspent dollars that are turned back, go back into the general fund based upon your operating expenses. However, I think part of what we're looking at right now is to try to get some sense of where we may be, because there is a couple items that the board would like to be able to move to in the near future, whether we have dollars this year or in the FY13 budget. Certainly one of those issues is security for the entire buildings throughout Story County, and the other has to do with the public meeting room that you're sitting in and trying to be able to have our meetings via cable access and so forth. So those were dollars that were not plugged in the original budget, except there was some dollars put aside for FY13 for security. So basically what we have done, we have asked department heads and elected offices to come to the meeting today so that we could have a discussion regarding the decision on whether to appropriate the remaining 5% or whether those dollars will retain where they are in the general fund, so that the board may determine how to spend some of those dollars. This is in no way meant to be a punitive situation or taking dollars back from you, but it is part of our collaborative effort to have that ongoing communication and discussion. I would just like to say that from the standpoint of the board, we have two new board members that are in their second year, and what we've done previously basically is we have appropriated full 100% with the exception of 1 year, I believe, that I'm aware of, when we probably withheld about 3% at one point due to others some financial concerns. However, where we are today is trying to see what dollars that may be available at the end of the fiscal year and whether or not it would have a major impact on any of your budgets if the board did not appropriate the final 5%. I don't want to put any words in the mouth of the other two supervisors, but the auditor, as she always does, brings this to our attention and then asks us, prior to her having the final resolution for appropriation, is do we actually appropriate the final 5% or not? And this is the purpose of having this meeting and this discussion. I'd like to first yield to Assistant Auditor Lisa Markley a little bit to kind of tell us a little bit about where we are at this time of year, and then I will open it up to any of our elected officers, department heads, also any comments from the board members seated here as we address this topic and this concern. Lisa.
Well, as you said, you have appropriated by resolution 95% of the budget at this point in time, with a few exceptions. There were a few departments that we went ahead and appropriated 100% for various reasons. The CLP and mental health and remodeling situation over at the HSC were all appropriated 100%. The board has the authority via appropriation to determine that. When I was here last week, I said to you that my recommendation at this point in time would be to appropriate the remaining salary dollars at least for all the departments. I have run some numbers. I'm trying to do my best estimates of where the revenues are going to come in. I'll know more after I post revenues today, obviously, for April. My numbers, originally when we put the budget together, we had a 21.5% ending fund balance in the general only. The most recent amendment put us at right at 21% still. I know that your goal is to be as close to 25 as possible. And when we put the budget together, that was one of the things that you talked about. Let's see where we're at year end. Let's see where we're going.
Yeah, and our goal is 25%.
Correct.
We like to get as close to that goal as possible, but our goal is 25%.
Correct. By not appropriating all of the dollars. And when I say that, I mean all of the dollars, exception with the exception of payroll. We'd be at about 22% is my most recent estimate. Now, understand that those numbers can change daily because it depends on where we're at with revenues and where they're coming in at. We have seen some savings this year in utilities. We've got numerous departments. I counted nine that have salary savings from not filled positions, delaying positions, those types of situations. We've seen some savings in the general building repairs and maintenance. I think a lot of the focus has been on the Human Services Center, so a lot of the other needs haven't really been as forefront. And when we put the budget together for FY13, we talked about to IT about the hardware purchases, not knowing for sure what direction we're going to go there. So we're seeing some savings in hardware purchases. So there are some real savings outside of just the salaries also. I don't know what else you want me to tell you.
No, I think
estimate.
Yeah, I think basically that's kind of where we're at. The question that you raised earlier when you floated this is you left the option of if we appropriate the dollars to take care of salaries, then the remaining dollars, did you try to figure out what that percentage would actually end up being?
I did not figure out a percentage per se. I just recommended that the salaries be appropriated. You know, even if they're appropriated, that doesn't mean they're going to get spent. It just is that they're appropriated and available. There are two departments I have, three actually, probably, yeah, two departments I have that will need the remaining appropriation for dollars in order to make it through the fiscal year at this point in time. I start in March saying, okay, this is what I project for payroll for the rest of the fiscal year for every department so that I know where we're at. And the attorney's office and the animal control office both are going to need their salaries to make it through the rest of the year.
Need the full 5% in order to be able to pay salaries.
Correct.
Yep. Yeah, I think, Wayne, if it's okay, I'll step in here. I think you hit a lot of great points. I'll give you guys my view on what the three of us are elected to do. Clearly, you know, the Board of Supervisors is a broad and varied list of responsibilities, and I would put drainage districts up there. I'd put some things we didn't know. Here's what we knew, all of us knew when we ran for office. Primary responsibility of the Board of Supervisors is in the budgeting, approving claims, and appropriating dollars. So to me, this is just a natural function of what we're supposed to do as Board of Supervisors members. Now, I agree with anybody who would say that the budget is the snapshot that we have 18 months roughly before we spend all the dollars of where we hope we're going to be, where we think we're going to be. And unless there's some kind of major financial concern that would cause us to withhold budgeted dollars, I can't see a reason that the Board of Supervisors would do that. Now, that said, I'm going to draw a line there between dollars that are spent on budgeted items and dollars that are spent on not budgeted items. I just view this as part of our responsibility to go through and take a look at it with full understanding that our relationship, the three of us relationship with our departments here in the county, is a little different than our relationship with our other elected officials, which are all on equal line with us. It just so happens that our responsibility is in the budgeting, approval of claims, and appropriation process. So I've pushed Lisa really hard for us to have this conversation. And I'll just tell you guys, I never thought for a second that there was 5% on the table that we were talking about not allocating. What I felt was important is that when you really manage a budget, you take a look at it at certain points of the year, and more closely as you get near the end of the year, to try to manage those dollars as well as you can and try to make sure that that priorities are still met by the county. Clearly, if we ever get in a tough financial situation where revenues don't come in like we expect, state dollars don't flow this way, something happens, there could be a day, Wayne, I think you guys went through this 3 or 4 years ago, where you have to pull some dollars back, and that is less about what it's being spent on and more about where the revenues are. This one, for me, is completely about, okay, This is, as I view, a right opportunity for the Board of Supervisors to take a look at where we actually are in the budget process. I think Lisa makes a great recommendation, and I'd even go one step further. I believe that this board should go ahead and appropriate all dollars necessary to complete all payrolls for this fiscal year. We should also go ahead and appropriate every dollar that we have remaining to be spent on budgeted items that our departments have not yet spent. Outside of that, I think we need to be really cautious about what we appropriate, and if we only appropriate 99% to a certain department, that to me, that's just sound business practice. So that's where this conversation comes from. Now, I'm not real clear, Lisa, on what kind of action we take from here. I see that our next item on the agenda is talking about setting the final budget amendment. So walk me through how all this has to happen, how the dominoes have to fall for us to make all this come together.
Well, at this point in time, they're two separate issues. The final appropriation, actually, we could talk about the final appropriation up until June 20, the last Tuesday in June, because we do not have to appropriate the remaining dollars until then. We could do some now and some then if we wanted to. The appropriation process just authorizes us, authorizes the departments to spend the money. There's no need to do that immediate. My only concern was the fact that I kind of wanted a picture of where we were going to be going. The budget amendment has to happen before May 31st. The code says that we have to give 30 days for appeal if that is something that someone wants to do. So that's why I'm saying to you, there are some places that we're going to want to amend the budget, which in all reality are very little related to the general fund or the funds we're talking about. They're more the special revenue funds, special animal care, the attorney fine collection that they're wanting to spend, but we didn't know how much we were going to bring in. Well, now they're bringing dollars in there. The HSC remodel, the mental health situation. Those are all things that, while related to the budget, are separate from this discussion when it comes to how much we're going to leave in the general fund, as far as I'm concerned.
Your best guess is that if we did appropriate the remaining 5%, that we would end up close to a 21% ending fund.
If it all got spent.
You say if it's all spent.
Right.
I look back at the last couple of years that I've been here and then the time I spent at the sheriff's office, and I think most of the elected officials and departments have done a pretty decent job of turning back money at the end of the fiscal year. I guess sometimes I try to put myself in a position where I'm trying to run a budget that was set 18 months ago. Here we are at the very end of it, the last 5%. This budget was put together almost 18 months ago. And like I said, most departments and their elected officials have done a pretty good job of turning money back in at the end of the fiscal year. You know, that makes you think, well, are we giving them too much at the beginning during the budget session? Or have they done a really good job of managing their budget and they're able to do that? And then you get to the discussion of unbudgeted items. And I know that... you know, we've got a policy where we want to acknowledge any unbudgeted expenditure from an elected official that's over $5,000 if it's not budgeted. And I know that the sheriff's got a large purchase that's on his plate, and this is a large purchase that from where I sit, I think he's made a good case that this is something that the department needs to move forward. He's identified savings in his budget where he thinks he can make that purchase out of this fiscal year, and it's a large purchase. And then I sit back and think, well, if he's able to come up with that much savings, did we do what we were supposed to do 18 months ago when we talked about this budget? You know, the expenditure is going to come back. If he's not able to do it this year, he's going to come back next year during budget time, and he's going to want to make that purchase. And are we going to be able to accommodate that request, or is it going to be something that we're going to have to piecemeal? And that, I guess, that's what I struggle with. I know the discussion is going to come back one way or the other. If we do appropriate the remaining 5% to all the departments and elected officials, or if we only do salaries, it's a difficult decision. I mean, if an elected official can identify that, you know, a large amount of savings in a current budget to make a purchase, you know, for me it's going to be a little tougher discussion next year when we sit down in January, and if there's items on that. On his request that have been requested last year that he didn't get or was put on the back burner, and now he's spent this money out of this budget to buy something that wasn't budgeted for, I guess that's when it becomes difficult for me.
Well, and Paul, I agree with you. I would just say I'm sure that knowing how the sheriff operates, he's had the same conversations with the two of you that he's had with me individually, and I'll tell you, I've been completely pleased with how he's kept me informed of what his thought process is in exercising clearly what are well within his rights and privileges as an elected official. But I feel like I'm completely informed on what the sheriff is thinking and what he's doing. Now, I'm with you on the budgeting process. If he's setting aside budgeted items this year in order to be able to make these purchases that he deems necessary for his department, that's a conversation that I view we're going to have as part of the budget process next year. But as far as the way the sheriff has conducted his, he was the furthest thing from my mind in going through this. It was that, what, $5,100 acknowledgement that we had on the budget last week that triggered, I think, some of the conversation of where all this was going. But for me, anyway, it had very little, well, nothing to do with the way the sheriff is handling things. And like I say, I do view our elected offices differently than I view our departments. I actually, in my mind, unless you can make a case that there is some major financial difficulty, I cannot find a way that it's reasonable to me for the Board of Supervisors to withhold appropriations from our elected officials. We handle that as part of the budget process. Now, if there's financial difficulty, then all bets are off and we've got to make the decisions we make. I view our departments entirely differently. They answer to the Board of Supervisors. We make those decisions, and we can make them midstream if we need to. I mean, that's part of managing the budget. So, I mean, just how I'm viewing things, I would actually sit here and encourage all our elected officials. It is really helpful as a board member. If you can keep the board informed of what you're doing and why you're doing it, it helps us understand the pieces as we get to budget time. And so I've been appreciative of that with the sheriff.
I won't really try to go back and encapsulate, you know, what has already been said. I'm 100% agreement with you. I think one of the challenges that we have that I just want to point out is this year, when we went to the liaison assignments, we then rely upon the individual, one board member, to have communication with either elected offices or department heads regarding where they are during the process. And a lot of those discussions are not brought back and then discussed in a public forum. Here, we just kind of give you a topic, an overview of the kinds of things, but if there were specific requests that may involve funding requests, then that's usually brought to the board in a formal manner, because then we have to decide whether or not we're going to basically approve that. I was earlier informed by several departments how we've kind of, what some of the needs were throughout the year. And I do know that from past practice, as you alluded to, departments that answer directly to us oftentimes will come up near the end of the year and say, there is a need that I have the dollars in my budget, can I spend those dollars? And then we look at that and then determine or give the go-ahead and do so, provided that they do have those dollars available. The challenge, as Mr. Toot alluded to, is always the difficult one of trying to say that when we set that budget several months ago, 18 months out, that there are going to be not some unforeseen, unknown things. There's always going to be some possible savings, utility costs, other types of things that come out of there, maybe at a different level than what was normally figured in. And I do think that at times you may have to give up a desire to purchase certain line items if there is something else that come up and you know that you're not going to get additional dollars. What I heard you say, I think, is really what we want to convey to our elected office holders and departments, is the more communication with us, the more comfortable we will be, then we can make sure that the public is educated about the budgeting process and how tax dollars are actually being spent. Because I see most of what we're talking about is that ability to communicate to the public, are we making wise choices with taxpayer dollars? And if we can improve that communication, which I think we have in previous years, but I don't think the two of you have had the history that I've had with some of our elected officials, so I think it is very appropriate for us to have that level of conversation now and to try to talk about how we want to continue to have that in years to come. I think the other thing that it's important for elected officials, department heads, it's been here for many years, is we should never assume that we're going to always do things the way we always used to do them. When you change personnel, they come in with different ideas and things, that oftentimes that's a good time to evaluate what you've done, whether or not you can tweak it, whether there's a better way of doing things, and I think that's a healthy situation for us. And I think this is what this board has done. They've certainly caused me to rethink a lot of the way that we do things and how we can communicate better with you as department heads and elected offices. So saying that, I think, again, it boils back that we're all in this together. We the Board of Supervisors, view this as a team effort. And so how we accomplish appropriating those dollars and how we communicate that to the public, I think, is very important, not only from our standpoint, but it's because of yours, because this is the only way that the public is aware of the expenditures if it comes through the board and the board proceedings. So with that, I would just like to basically ask if there is any of our elected officers or department heads that have any specific questions. I know I personally talked to several of you, didn't get to all of you regarding this. But we did invite you to come. So if there's something specific that you've heard from the three of us, the issues out there is, would there be some significant impacts to your budget if you didn't receive the full 5%, some being operating and some being salary? I guess that's kind of where we're at today. I think the sheriff.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I can answer that for everybody. 5% would be significant to anybody here, department or otherwise.
I think the sheriff wanted to make a comment. Please come on down.
Hello, Bob.
Thank you. Since the sheriff was talking,
the lights on and everything.
Since the sheriff has talked about it, I feel somewhat obligated to say something. First of all, I'd like to basically just quickly address the process. We have the work sessions on the budget in the fall. We go through this, and to me, the 20 years that I've been here, the budget has always been basically an agreement between the elected officials, the Board of Supervisors, and the other elected officials, that that is what we would need as we project 18 months out to run our budget. Now, conversations we've also had with the board when we've gone through this budget cycle is that an elected official is a little bit different than a department head. Now, an elected official needs to have the flexibility to change priorities within the fiscal year as things develop. Now, there's been past years where we've gone out and things we've budgeted for, we've been able to go out and been successful in securing grants, which has been a big reason for the money that we're able to turn back to the general fund. Now, as an elected official, and like all elected officials, we also have a financial responsibility to the taxpayers that elect us. And for me to be able to turn back those funds that were budgeted and not used, I've always been very proud of that I could turn back to the public. So with that said, we're looking at this current fiscal year. Now, what I had started to do, and the past 20 years that I've been sheriff, I think it's been very clear and very transparent how I spend monies in my office. And I don't think the board has ever been surprised or shocked by expenditures that have come through my office that weren't specifically budgeted for two reasons. Number one is expenses that have come have been within the dollars that were in my budget. And I've always come to the board and had a conversation with the board so the board would have a heads up as to what was going on ahead of time. I don't think I've ever surprised this board on the way I conducted the office of sheriff, and especially when it comes to managing the funds appropriated. But here again to the principal, by not allocating money that was basically, as I looked at, agreed upon through a budgeting process, that takes away the elected official's opportunity to manage, reprioritize, and put in place things that they need to operate that office. The item that Paul's talking about, the large expenditure that we have, I came several months ago and talked to the board. I did not come to a full meeting of the board because I was not asking for additional funding. I was just talking to the board, a conversation of plans that I had, because I had found something that I thought was of such urgency that we needed to move on it now. And so I've cut back spending, ordered spending holds in certain areas of my budget so we could maybe reach that target, and I think we're being successful on that. And before I do any purchase, again, I'll come back to the board knowing what dollars I have in my budget and to let the board know what my thoughts are. So with that said, I ask the board not to deviate from a process that has been a long-standing process. I'm certainly in agreement with what Rick said, that if the county is in a difficult situation or a crisis does develop, when it happened before, as a department head, we were asked to hold back on spending and not, you know, have that money appropriated. I think we're all rational and reasonable people that we will certainly work with the board at any time in crisis. We're all in this together. But throughout the rest of the year, I ask that the process to remain that when there's an agreement on a budget, that those dollars are appropriated to the elected officials, and it's our responsibility to use those dollars wisely and turn back any unused dollars to the general fund. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Teresa?
I just think it's important to make a couple of comments here. I do want to
identify who you are and who you represent.
Teresa Smith, Legal Executive Officer for the Story County Attorney's Office. I do want to, just so everybody's knowledgeable on this, I know we are running close on our percentage for wages, but specifically because we just got another $45,000 grant, so we were able to keep our forfeiture attorney on a little bit longer. So that's going to put us in a position that we need to amend to include that $45,000. The other thing is the prior board approval for ProLaw. That was a big change, but we're not spending general funds money for that. We're spending money that is directly into the county attorney's couple of special funds. The other thing is, I think for the last 2 years, the board has really pressed us to narrow that gap, and I've worked very hard at narrowing that gap. It used to be that we were able to turn back quite a bit of money at the end of the fiscal year, but I'm really trying to narrow that gap under your advisement. So therefore, when we get towards the end and you say we're worried about this last 5%, I get a little nervous because I've narrowed that gap. So I just wanted to make those few points.
Great. Anyone else? Any other department heads, elected officials? Okay. Okay. Okay.
All right. I'd like to make a motion. I would move. I'd like to make two motions, actually. First one I'd like to make is I'd like for us to go ahead and appropriate the remaining 5% to all elected officials for this fiscal year.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded for us to go ahead and approve the appropriation of the remaining 5% to all elected offices. Further discussion? Okay. Okay. With that, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Okay.
I'd like to move that we appropriate all necessary salary dollars at this point to our departments for the remainder of FY12.
Second.
It's been moved and second that we appropriate all salary dollars to our departments for the remaining fiscal year, I suppose. Discussion.
Lisa, does that free you up to do what needs to be done to get us in the right direction, probably making one more appropriation as we get close to the end?
Okay, no further comments. Okay, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay. All right. Thank you. Anything else on that? Let me just basically say the entire process, I think, is one in which I think we, as we sit up here and as we work with the department heads in elected office, there's always going to be times and areas where we're going to be receiving input from you regarding what you perceive to be your respective needs. And several times there will be some difficult positions or stances that sometimes we as a board take. We really will question you thoroughly about why that's necessary, or are there other options that is available and so forth. But when it's finally determined what the direction we want to go, it is a direction that is usually done where we have all been in agreement that that is the best position to take. I think the board appreciates your involvement to this point and what we hope to have in future years. And I would like to also compliment both Rick and Paul and Lisa the way that we've tried to go about discussing this topic, because I think it does speak volumes in terms of how careful we are about looking at the budgeting process, looking at the appropriation process, and try to determine if those dollars do meet the various needs that you have identified within your department, and then how we can communicate to the public of our fiduciary responsibility. And you're the catalyst, because when you give it to us, then we can pass it on to the public how those dollars are basically being spent. So that's the important part that we're trying to convey here as we go through this process. And again, I want to thank each and every one of you for your time and effort. And Lisa, certainly want to thank you. You've done just a marvelous job year after year in keeping the board well informed and pretty good prognosticator in terms of where we are and what adjustments we may need to make at various times.
Wayne, before we go, I'd like to say one thing to Teresa. Teresa, I appreciate you coming up here and addressing us, and I'll just say from my perspective, you're doing a phenomenal job really managing what is, in a lot of ways, a tough situation with the workload you guys have in the county attorney's office. But I would say it's supposed to be stressful. We're dealing with public dollars, we're public officials or public employees, and if it's easy at the end of the year, if we're easily able to do everything we want to do, then we're not representing the public as we're supposed to. So I'd love to tell you it's not going to be stressful in the future. I firmly believe that it's our job to make the budgeting process and the thin line that we're going to operate on, as stressful as possible, frankly. But I appreciate what you're doing and appreciate what you're doing.
I kind of like this process, and I just want to let everybody know not to be too surprised if we're in the same boat next year. I think it gives us a good opportunity towards the end of the fiscal year to let us to take a really hard look at where we're at. Because once, you know, if we'd appropriated all of it at once or 50% at two different occasions, once it's gone, it's a little bit harder to get back. So
good. Okay. Well, with that, thank you. You're all welcome to remain for the remaining portion of the meeting. But I
money is why they were
but
here.
But I recognize a lot of you do have a lot of things on your plate. So thank you. Okay, moving on to item five. Consideration of setting the final FY12 budget amendment for 5/22/12. Lisa, you've determined that that is necessary in order to meet the deadline for the 30-day notification in case there are some concerns. Is that correct?
Yeah, the final amendment, if we're going to do one, which I'm going to recommend that we do one, needs to be done by the end of May so that there's the appeal process can happen if so desired. What I will do is if we set it for the 22nd of May for that public hearing, then we will need to I will need to get to the paper this week. What I'll do is I will send you what I typically send you. These are the things that need to be amended from my perspective.
Yeah.
If you have any problems, additions, whatever, you'll need to let me know. And then we'll set the public hearing for 5/22, which means it needs to go in the paper on 5/10.
Okay. Great. Okay, so, Board, I would entertain a motion.
I'd move setting May 22nd for final budget amendment.
Second.
Been moved in second to set May 22nd for the final budget amendment for FY12. Hearing no further discussion, all in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Okay.
I'm going to stay here because Alyssa's not here, and I don't know if you have any questions about the next item.
We might. Rick has been working on this, so I think he'll handle it okay. Item six is discussion and consideration of employer of record agreement between Boost Together for Children. This is Boone and Story County effective 6/1/12 to 6/30/13. Supervisor Sanders, you've probably been involved with this a little bit, as well as Assistant Arch Lisa Markley. Anything to add?
Yeah, Alyssa has been more heavily involved in this than anybody I know. We've got Ann Lundvall here today. I don't think Ann prefers to come to the microphone, so Ann, you don't have to come unless you just decide you want to. This is one of those consolidations of services I think going on statewide in pretty much every area, but basically we're combining our early childhood area with Boone's. We have been the fiscal agent for years. We have not been the employer of record, but the group determined that it made sense to keep that fiscal agent and employer of record together, wanted it to be one county or the other. Clearly, since I represent Story County, I would prefer Story County to be in that position. I'd ask Steve Owen if he saw any concerns in this agreement at all. I think it's one that we've really massaged and worked through to try to make sure that Story County is really protected in all this, and it's pretty clear what that Boost Together for Children's board's responsibility is.
I did look at that, and Steve Owen, County Attorney's Office, I did look at that, and I had a few questions. Alyssa and I were able to work that through. I think she'd been in contact with Ann and Lisa as well, so a few concerns I had were, you know, how raises are determined, how this is all managed and administered, and those questions were answered. So I do appreciate their work. Thanks.
Okay. And last evening, the MICA Board of Directors did approve this. There was an application that came forth regarding this program, and so I was familiar with it prior to the discussion today. So,
I think it's got a chance to be a really, really good thing. It is a change in the way our local providers are gonna have to operate in dealing with that early childhood area. With that, I'd move approval of the agreement between Story County and Boost.
Second.
It's been moved and second to move the agreement between Boost, Story County, and Boone for the Boost Together for Children. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
And now, that was the employer of record portion.
Right. Yeah. The second part is the agreement between Story County for the fiscal agent is the second part.
Which is basically a continuation of what Story County has been doing for the empowerment group, although we're adding a larger area. So I would move approval of that agreement as well.
Second.
Been moved in second, the approval of the agreement for Story County to continue as the fiscal agent for this group between Boone and Story. Hearing no further comments, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Okay, item 8, discussion of paving projects for 590th Avenue and 600th Avenue and Grant Avenue. This is a continuation. This has been on our agenda for the last three board meetings, and so we'll ask Darren, where are we now?
Well, essentially, this is just to keep the discussion going. As a reminder, the board did approve to add both these projects to FY17 in the fifth year of the construction program. But as I indicated,
530th then. If we didn't approve both 590th and 600th, did we?
That was a slash either.
A slash. Or,
yeah. And would say I had indicated that it would be nice if the board wants to amend that and bring one up to be constructed sooner, that we know make a decision by July 1st of this year so we could start the survey and design work this fall. So that's kind of where we are.
Where are we on, we talked about we're going to put down asphalt millings on 600th instead of gravel at the time that gravel was scheduled to be put down. When is that scheduled?
That should happen in the next week or two here. We're wrapping up our rock hauling, so that truck will be free in the next week or two. So, and we don't do our normal dust control until last week of May anyway, so we'll have it done before our normal dust control is done.
Okay.
Question, knowing that we're going to do that and understanding that from prior history, that is no good indication that it will hold up and last in the same manner as we might otherwise assume the rock would be, but it would lessen the amount of dust and things of this nature. Are we at a point that it would be appropriate to evaluate that, or have we done this enough in a large enough stretch of road to determine how effective the millage would be? And what I'm just trying to determine is, can we use that and then try to put this down, of say, for a year from now or whenever we would have to actually approve that, if we had to adjust that schedule and maybe continue with what we're currently doing, have plans for this FY, and then the following year try to make a commitment to come back and reevaluate that, only to use that so that if we have other needs of using that, we can use this as an example and say, well, it was effective or it was not effective. But at the same time, I believe the property owners in that area would like to have a commitment from us that we're going to move forward with the idea of trying to pave that, since this has been something that had been on the docket several years ago that had to be removed for financial reasons. So I'm not asking us to kick this further down the road, but I'm just trying to say within this year or the next year that we find a way to address this if at all possible. I'm just throwing that out as a point of discussion.
We did this a few years back, and it doesn't really compare to dust control, calcium chloride or something like that, but it helps with the dust, and I think the next year you pretty much couldn't tell it was there again, so it almost has to be done annually to make it
so
dust control.
And I don't remember if we had this discussion or if I just forgot it, but are we going to do the whole length of 600th with the millings?
Well, our goal is to start at the south end and work our way north and see how far that gets us doing it adequately in front of the houses so it does something for dust. And if we don't make it to the north end,
And then do they dust control that also? You don't. Do or don't?
I don't believe anybody gets dust control on that stretch right now.
But as I recall, the motion was to replace that road. 600th was already scheduled to take gravel this year, and the motion was to replace the gravel that we were putting around with the asphalt millings, which I take to mean it was the entire what mile?
But if we stretch that out that far, the entire mile, I don't think you'll get near the dust control that we experienced a few years back. We put, I think, 300 ton on just in front of the houses, so we're looking at 250 ton on the whole mile now, so it'd be a lot less than it was before, just so you're aware of that.
Well, I don't think anybody is pretending for a second that this is a long-term answer. This is meant to be do what we can while we try to make a decision of where we're going. Now, talking about 590-600, seems to me in our last conversation, there's a potential there to make one of those a farm to market road.
Correct. Right.
So as I see it, that's the first step, is figuring out if we can make it a farm to market, what the process is to make it a farm to market, and what dollars that would free up if, in fact, it does become a farm to market. The second part to this, guys, and we keep getting close to this, but we haven't quite said it yet, is we've got to have a conversation and finally set exactly what our TIF process is going to be. I'm not saying that either one, that these roads or 530th, either one of those are going to necessarily fit into our ideas of what a TIF project is, but I do believe they're at least worthy of consideration of getting into that funnel. The problem is we don't have the funnel right now. We don't know how we're going to work our way through what is a worthy TIF project, what's not, and so as part of, I guess, running on a parallel track, part of this conversation with these roads has to be what our TIF process is and how we're going to feed things into that for consideration by this board. So I guess one direction to you is I would like to know what the farm-to-market process is and what it would take to designate one of these a farm-to-market, and then if we do that, what dollars it potentially frees up to be able to pave one of these two. And the second one, Steve Owen, I would ask you to assist one of us in starting to draft what the process needs to be to make good decisions on TIF dollars with that December 1st date in mind that our auditor has to go ahead and certify debt. And I know everything we're doing works backwards off December 1st, but it just seems to me we know that we're going to have to, this year, December 1st, there's going to be Dakin's Lake dollars that are going to have to be done. We already know that. We don't know if there's any other projects, if any of these road paving projects, if any of our bridges, if anything like that fits in to what we're considering with TIF, because we don't know how we're going to talk about that yet. So if that's acceptable to you guys, that's what I would ask for.
Well, certainly we need to have that conversation. The only question that, while this is considered to be parallel, the decision that I heard Darren say here is that if we were going to adjust, you know, the plans that are currently in place now in order to have the letting and so forth, we would have to decide that prior to the July 1st date. Is that the term, or did you say June 1st?
For planning purposes, it would help us if you did by then.
Right. So I guess part of that, and I'm just wondering if you could identify the four or five projects that, you know, we have prioritized, basically, and if we made an adjustment, and what would we take off? If we could just kind of look at that before we make any final determinations, I feel that all of this discussion would help us a lot in terms of meeting that deadline, so that we know whether we're going to do it this year or the following year. I believe that my feeling, I'd say, is that I do not want to go beyond at least next year to fulfill that obligation, because once the other developments occur, we know there's going to be more traffic on this road. I just really believe that, and I know the DOT is not going to change their whole configuration here with the dollars and the cutbacks that they're having right now, you know, in the next 3 to 4 years. That's going to be a much longer process down in terms of what they do for the exit there at Airport Road. So
I think that's kind of what part of the discussion we had a couple weeks ago, when I think we needed to determine what the city's going to do with the new DuPont plant that's going to go on 590th and see what how the configuration that they currently have in front of the ethanol plant, which mandates that semis coming from the west go clear down to 600th to get into the plant because of the way the entrance is configured. And if we can have that discussion and then focus on whether we're going to look at 590th or 600th to change to a farm-to-market road. And Nancy, you can shoot me the stink eye if you want, but we're looking at paving the first quarter mile of 590th. And for me, it makes sense if we're going to pick one of those two to move to a farm-to-market road that it would be 590th, as long as we can have a conversation with the city to see how the entrance to that whole ethanol complex is going to work out there. So,
just real quick, as far as the farm-to-market process goes, there's a committee that meets about twice a year to review any changes. I've had a discussion with the chair. It doesn't sound like adding 590th or 600th will be a problem. We'll probably have to take a mile off our system somewhere else to balance it out, but it doesn't sound like that'll be an issue.
Great.
The grant would be a different story. There's no real farm-to-market component to that road, and that with the paved mile each way of it, that one wouldn't fly, I don't think. So.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you. So we'll continue to have you do some additional homework and plan to get back to us.
As I hear it, Darren, we're asking you for three things. We're asking you to visit with the city of Nevada and figure out what their plans are for that frontage road and what the entrances to DuPont and Lincoln Way Energy is going to look like once they get that done. We're looking for farm to market. Clearly, you believe that that's something we would have the ability to do, but I'd like to know what kind of dollars ultimately that would free up for us to look at doing this. And then finally, as Wayne asked, we need to know what available dollars we have this year if we put one of these paving projects higher on our priority list and knock something else out, what's available to us. So if you guys agree, those are the three things that I think we're asking you to take from this.
Great. Good. Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay, moving on. Boy, Jeff has been waiting. Agency reports, Boys and Girls Club of Story County. Jeff Gersheider, welcome.
Thank you. Jeff Gersheider, Executive Director of the Boys and Girls Club of Story County. The mission of the Boys and Girls Club of Story County is to inspire and enable the young people of Story County to realize their full potential as productive, responsible, and caring citizens. One thing I want to start off by saying is thank you to Story County as a whole, Board of Supervisors, maybe anybody in this room that has helped us live up to that mission for the youth of Story County. We serve boys and girls ages 7 to 18. Every day after school right now, we're gearing up for our summer program that's going to start June 4th. We are currently, our attendance has actually grown a little bit here recently. We've been serving 60 to 65 kids a day right now after school, which is up from about 50 to 55. And then we'll gear up for the summer, where last summer we averaged 100 kids a day. We're hoping it's going to be around that number. Potentially it could be more, but that's one thing as a Boys and Girls Club. We never know how many are going to be there today. It all varies on what's going on in the community, what's going on with their families, and so forth. We continue now after school. We are currently picking up kids in our vans at the Ames Middle School and the Ames High School, which we are actually making a couple trips to each place, which is a good thing. We're bringing in a lot of kids from those schools. And then the Ames school bus system, we continue to utilize that to get the elementary kids there. Some things that we're working on with some of the priorities, I say, that we have and maybe the city and the county have. One is transportation, which I just talked about. One is helping these kids create a healthy lifestyle. We're trying to get them more active and not sitting playing video games and sitting on the computer and so forth, but getting them up and moving. It's kind of a national movement that Boys and Girls Clubs of America has, but getting them, and not just in PE-type activities and sports and so forth, but just up and moving, doing different things within the club. And we just participated last 2 weeks ago was National Boys and Girls Club Week, and Boys and Girls Clubs of America We did a Guinness Book of World Records attempts to get the most kids. It was across the country playing a game of tag. So we did that. We had a bunch of kids playing a game of tag simultaneously with all the other clubs in the country doing that. But that's just one of the initiatives we're working on. And one is hunger. Every day, every evening, now we are giving a meal to the kids. It is mostly community-based, community-donated. It's either run by my staff or volunteers. It could be catered in from a restaurant, or it could be something that we purchased over at Walmart and prepared as a staff, but giving those kids a meal every night. So, you know, when they come to the club every day after school, they're coming, getting their homework done with our relationship with Iowa State University and the students there, but, you know, help getting their homework done, getting some physical activity, interacting with hopefully some positive adult role models, getting an evening meal, so actually when they go home, their homework's done, you know, the meal's done, so they might have some time to spend with their families and hopefully, you know, create a good family relationship there as well. You know, a couple summers ago, we were devastated with the flood, and that has totally changed around. You know, the club is looking very well, and like I say, the attendance and our membership is growing quite steadily. A lot of new kids, you know, here coming up with the summer, normally, you know, our parents and kids wait to sign up the first day of summer, and I think we already have 40-some signed up for the summer already, so that that is growing as well. So.
And thank you, Jeff, for all you do and for our youth and our community as well and throughout Story County. I would like to tell you that I do have a little certificate for you. The Alzheimer's Association just recently had a fundraiser, and I bought 4 tickets. I believe it's in Webster City. That's
the capital of North Central Iowa, Wayne. I grew up in Webster City.
Football program or something. And I know when I bought them, I said, well, I'll just give those to the Boys and Girls Club, and maybe you guys could take a few kids there. So
I'd love to do that.
I have those back in my office there. So
excellent.
If I could probably even get it to you today or just drop them off to the office
thank
for you.
Thank you.
Okay? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I need a minute.
Okay, the American Red Cross, Steve Barnett. Good, welcome.
Sure.
Great. Thank you.
Pardon me? Oh, I'm sorry. Absolutely.
And otherwise.
As mentioned, I'm Steve Barnett, Chapter Support Officer, American Red Cross, and I'm responsible for the Lincoln Way Chapter in Ames, including Story County, also Green and Boone. I'll go ahead and just take a minute to read the mission statement for the benefit of the folks here in the audience. The American Red Cross prevents and alleviates human suffering in the face of emergencies by mobilizing the power of volunteers and the generosity of donors. And then I'll also share our vision quickly. The Lincoln Way Chapter, through its strong network of volunteers, donors, and partners, is always there in times of need. We aspire to turn compassion into action so that all people affected by a disaster in Story County receive care, shelter, and hope, so that the communities within Story County are ready and prepared for disasters, so that all members of our armed forces and their families find support and comfort whenever needed, and finally, in an emergency, there are always trained individuals nearby ready to use their Red Cross skills to save lives. And then I've included for the supervisors a map of the greater Iowa region, and I wanted to explain that quickly if I could. The American Red Cross has been undergoing a lot of transition. One of the transitions is we're moving more and more toward a regional structure. And in Iowa, the greater Iowa region is the peach area, the blue area, and then the gold area. And within that jurisdiction, we've just internally divvied it up into three different areas: Greater Northwest, Central, and Eastern Iowa. And we've got within our jurisdiction, Greater Iowa, 11 offices, one of which is the Lincoln Way chapter in Ames. And now to specifics as far as what we've been doing here. And this is year to date. We still have 2 months left in our fiscal year as well. So far, we've had 10 single family fire responses. We've trained over 2,400 individuals. We've worked with over 120 active partners. These are companies and civic organizations and so forth that help us to offer training. We have 32 what we call DSHR members, and what that is, some volunteers within disaster services want to be trained and be in a position to go out on national disaster assignments, you know, Katrina, Joplin, and so forth. And so we have the mechanism to do that for them. And quite honestly, it's one of the things that the Red Cross is very proud of, because almost all of our disaster response for large-scale disasters through volunteers. And then no breakdowns of service in armed forces messages. We're the link between the military and their families in times of emergency, so we were able to successfully deliver all those messages in a very quick and effective manner. Then also I've included for the commissioners as well, this is actually our May Health and Safety Services calendar, the trainings that are offered. You can see that these are specifically in Ames at the chapter site that we have there, but all different levels of training, from babysitters training to CPR, first aid, professional rescuers, and so forth. And this actually is a front page document, so we're conducting a lot of training here in the local area. And then on the disaster side, put together here a five-year history going back to FY08. And you can see we've expended anywhere from about $3,000 up to as high as about $7,400. This year, FY12, we've been very fortunate because we had such a favorable winter. It's like we didn't have a winter in some ways. And so because of that, we just didn't have the number of fires. Now, again, this is fiscal year, so we have two more months. So we don't know what that will bring to us. So we'll hope the numbers continue to stay low. And then finally, the last page, we have operational responses. You can see our dollars expended toward the small windstorm that we had here. And then in 2011, the flood. We had a total of 18 cases, 49 individuals impacted, and total assistance provided was $31,444. So the Red Cross is there. We're still providing services as we always have, and we appreciate the support of the county.
Just curious, as I look at your different training and so forth, and when you talk about rescue and healthcare providers,
right?
Pets, animals,
right?
Where do they factor in? Because we see story upon story where people are not going to leave their animals,
right?
In case of a disaster, and I think that is usually the one thing that a lot of times people fail to recognize is how do we handle, you know, that situation when it occurs.
Right, and that's very legitimate because, you know, folks respond like that. An animal is like a family member. Quite honestly, the regulations that we work under as far as cleanliness and so forth, we can't allow animals in a shelter with the exception of a CNI dog or that kind of thing. But we want to work with local entities out there that do provide that same level of service. And it's all a matter of establishing the partnerships and making sure that there are avenues for animals when that time does come. So,
well, thank you for your service.
All right.
And hopefully
you.
The
appreciate
coordination will
thank
continue
you for having
to be.
Me. Thank you.
Very good. Okay, next up, Departmental Pat Pinning, and as you come.
Step out, but I'll be right back, so thank you.
slowly to let Wayne get back. I'm Pat Penning with the Department of Human Services, and I sent out some reports. There's not a lot to report. We're waiting for the legislature to go home, of course. So we are down two positions here in Story County, an income maintenance worker who moved out of state and a social worker who retired in March. Excuse me. And we're hoping we're going to get to fill those positions, but right now we're just kind of waiting to see how the budget's going to play out for us for fiscal year 13 and won't be probably moving forward until we know what that is. So we're anxiously awaiting the adjournment of the legislature.
As are a lot of people.
I'm sure that's true. Group care numbers remain steady. They're over. We're actually over our number for the service area, but we do kind of manage that not only as a service area, but yet as a state. So we'll be fine with that as we move through that. But, of course, we're liking to keep kids out of group care whenever we can. As far as DCAT, coming near the end of the fiscal year, right now we can carry over dollars just 1 year. So there are some fiscal year 11 dollars that will probably revert. It will be a small amount because you can never spend a contract exactly down to the penny usually. And you can't overspend, so we're probably going to revert somewhere between $10,000 and $15,000. We continue to grow the parent partner program within the entire 15 counties of the service area. I know Story County is scheduled to have Building a Better Futures, which is kind of the start of that program. It was in May, it was early in May. I know it's been pushed back a little bit because of a training that they did in Dallas and an overlap of the people, so we kind of moved that back a little bit. Of course, the board is looking at some restructuring with Story County and whether or not they wanted to join in a, not to join the DCAT areas, but to maybe share in a coordinator. And I believe that's now been put off the table, and they're seeking a coordinator for Story County because Ann will be leaving at the end of June, even though I thought she should stay, and I just said that to her again.
We're letting a good one get away, I'm telling you.
That is for sure. I just wanted to do, since we don't have information from the legislature, et cetera, I just included a few pieces of information, a little bit about DCAT, and I'm sure you know a lot about DCAT because you guys have been around. Rick, of course, you're on that DCAT board, just about what that is, and it's basically just a way for us to redirect some child welfare and juvenile court services monies to use it more in a local way, more in a planned way from the community and what we think is needed specifically here in Story County and in any DCAT area. But I kind of focused on the programs that work with our youth, our older youth, looking at supervised apartment living. The YSS Center here provides many of those services for us in this area. But just we're looking at transitioning youth and trying to help them prepare themselves for adulthood. So the supervised apartment living are those kids that are still, they can start at for the cluster sites, which means they're kind of working in a group type of setting yet. That's actually moved from 16 years old up to 16 and a half before they can be eligible for that. And for the scattered site, which means they have an apartment out on their own, it's moved from 16 years to 17 years. Still trying, you know, having access to provider services at 24 hours a day, but really trying to prepare those kids that aren't going to be able to go back home to be living on their own, starting them learning how to apply for jobs, helping them to keep in school, et cetera. The next program we have is the aftercare services, and this was really created for those kids that are 18, 19, and 20. So they may be out formerly in foster care. They may not have an active DHS social worker anymore, but they do need to be able to have somebody help support them in, so that they can finish their high school education if they haven't been able to do that, and just have some support as they try to figure out how to live out in the world, how to get safe and stable housing, how to access medical care, because many of them are still eligible for Medicaid for at least until they're 21. So we want them to be aware of those services and how we can help them better live and become citizens of Iowa. And the last one is the Iowa Foster Care Youth Council. Again, YSS is very involved in that here. Used to be called the Elevate Program, is now called AMP, Achieving Maximum Potential. And that is a very active group of people, formerly kids in foster care. It is a statewide program. And they've been very active in policy input with us as the department about what they would like to see for future, because they have experienced this in their life. And they've been very active with the legislature. I know they were able to get some things about visiting their siblings into law, and some things about making sure that they have birth certificates and a variety of things. So they do have a voice. So if you see them around, I certainly encourage them to do that, because we want to encourage them to do that as well. Any questions?
Thank you. Thank you for the report. And we're still keeping our fingers crossed that the legislature is not going to come back with some big cuts down the road in the human service area.
Thanks, Pat.
Okay, IRVM, Joe. Come on down. Joe Quaker.
Keep telling me you're going to bring show and tell, and you never do.
He knew this was going
to... I don't want to see that.
Actually, I do have a bullseye rash. I'll have to go in. Caught it early. But pretty good season for ticks because we have the open winter. Be aware. And really, I haven't found any fresh mushrooms for a while, just to let you know. So I wrote some things down. Why don't I just go from the back and from what's going on today and from the last time I saw you, probably around the budget hearing. Sent up a truck today to University of Northern Iowa to get $6,000 worth of seed from a grant that we wrote last year. It's in 20 acres worth, about $300 an acre. So that'll help us out. Darren's been pretty busy, pretty successful, again, because of the weather conditions on getting a lot of road construction and clean outs done. We need to get them seeded. If you've been driving around, a lot of the things that we seeded last fall did fairly well. Greened up pretty good. The Skunk River Bridge, we do need to go back on a few sites you may hear about and rework them a little bit, fill them back in, you know, where the water comes out and may scour a hole, reseed a little bit. On R38, there's a spot. Let's see. Going backwards sometimes is tough. Safety Day is the 21st of this month. Wayne, I think you've been there a few times. I'm the safety chair. And we're looking for someone to play roles in verbal judo. So, you know.
I nominate Wayne.
There you go. Maybe Paul. Just to help some of the summer staff in case there would be a mad camp, you know, someone a little irritated, a camping site taken, and some things, you know, to say and what not to say, like calm down. I guess you're not supposed to say that. So, it doesn't work for my wife, I know that. Living Roadway Trust Fund grants are due at the end of this month. The new batch, a couple ideas, would be some more software for the new sprayer that we just got yesterday. You heard about that $17,000 rolling around for a couple years. Heartland Ag just finished it up. It's pretty impressive. I'll take some pictures and bring it in. It has two injection tanks, unlike the old sprayers. Well, really, you know, they've been doing injection systems for a long time, but tank mixing is normally what you do. You know, put it in the tank, it kind of guesses a little bit. This way, everything is metered by the gram, so pretty wise use of herbicide. We are mandated by Iowa code to control noxious weeds, so we do need to apply herbicide here and there on some of our rights-of-ways and our wildland areas, open spaces, which would bring me to the resolution. Iowa code, again, you know, we need to let the folks in Story County know that there are a few weeds out there they need to control. And I picked some seed dates. I think that'll work. And my number's on that. They can call if they have some problems I need to address. The one thing that we've added to that resolution is there is a sensitive crop site where anybody who's a grape producer or, you know, any sensitive crop, doesn't have to be organic, would want to register with the Iowa Department of Ag Land Stewardship, they can do so. And that way I can go online and look and see who's in Story County. Now, if they don't register, I don't know they're there. And that way we can, you know, get on our ARC map and block it out and make sure we don't spray around or contact those people. So we're trying to work with the you know, these folks a little better. And we haven't had any issues so far. So the other thing, too, is we always promote good land stewardship, waterways, and the conservation reserve to keep some of that soil back in Story County instead of into the ditches where Darren has to end up digging it out. So Yeah. We will be out with that injection sprayer and another pickup truck covering the hard surface roads. That's our, you know, kind of the way we do it as history. You know, we try to hit the high visibility areas for Canada thistle, teasel, and that's about it. Maybe some ragweed. The sheriff might call up for some hemp that we may need to spray and take care of that, but it's kind of everywhere.
As long as you're spraying that.
It's not a noxious weed, actually, so legally. What's that?
As long as you're spraying it and not
burning it. Yeah, I won't go there. I'll bring some of that in next time, too. Let's see.
I'm probably allergic, so don't do that.
I got you. Who was a board member who was a police chief back in the day from Ames?
Valentine.
Yeah,
Valentine.
I bought a nice plant in for him one time. He didn't even know what it was. Let's see. I worked hard on all our planting equipment through January, February, and we're ready to go. And I'm getting help next week. Finally got a wingman. We made do, kind of skimped by a little bit. As you know, the budget was a little tight. And so we're ready to hit it and catch up with some of the planting projects that Darren has done. Any questions?
Normally I would have more, but we got still a lot of things accomplished yet today. So thank you, Joe. And
I just think we need to find some money in the budget to send Joe to a professional development on coming out of his shell. So if we can find those dollars anywhere, it'd probably be beneficial.
Nervous talking to you guys.
Yeah.
Okay, planning and development, Leanne Harder.
with barely a detectable limp.
Coming.
Thank you. You gave me your notes, though. Did you want to give me your notes? Okay.
Good morning. Keep in mind your agenda. I just have a few things to brief you on. Some general items. Staff is spending time in the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority. Several meetings have been held, beginning with yours last week. And then following that, the Wednesday, we went, Mark Landers Snyder and Associates, and I went and met with the Boone County Board of Supervisors. And then Thursday, we had a stakeholder meeting, but a meeting at McFarland Park with those individuals that represented jurisdictions that could actually sign a 28E agreement. I think Paul was there. I think that meeting went very well. I was very pleased. I think when we left, we have a sense we definitely, by the deadline, will have a 28E agreement, signatures on the agreement. I've been working with Lisa in the auditor's office on that, on the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority, to work with the state to get the reimbursement sent in and then sent back to us. With that, we've set up time tracking sheets for our office. Initially, when the application was filed, we didn't have a real role. Now that we do, we need to be tracking our time very carefully since these are community development block grant funds. On that, I've thoroughly reviewed the CDBG management guide. If anyone wants some free reading for nighttime to go to sleep, that's a great resource to use, but it's good to do that because I don't deal with CDBG funds that often. Did we send the extension request into the state following the board meeting last Tuesday? I've not heard back, but I expect to hear by the end of this week. And then lastly, Mark Leandro Snyder has called Hamilton County and emailed them and asked that he and I go have an opportunity to go present it to their board, and so I'll let you know when I go up there. Moving on to the next item is Government Restructuring Committee. I think it's in the final phases or final stages. They're hoping to report to you on May 8th, so a week from today. What that means is they have a meeting tonight, and they'll probably be looking at one more meeting before next Tuesday. I'll probably be working with Shelley to see if we can have an extension to the agenda deadline till Friday morning if they do meet Thursday, because I won't be able to get all the final edits done in time by 3:00. But I think they'll have their recommendations to you by next Tuesday. Local foods meeting was held a couple weeks ago. This was put on by Iowa State Extension. They reached out to us to see if they could assist us. That's the notes that you see, Rick, that you thought were mine. What they did is they took the county's strategic plan, and the items that you selected as your priorities to engage staff and go forward with, they broke out into groups to look at those items, see what assistance they could provide. The next step is for me to follow up with Extension to see how we take the step beyond. There were some very good suggestions of things that could really assist us as a planning development staff. I'll keep you up to date on that one, because that could be very exciting. There's some very unusual partnerships that could come from that I had not ever thought of. Ames Urban Fringe issues, I think we do have two formal applications that have been submitted to the City of Ames. If you'll recall the attachment A, all applications go to Ames, and then Ames sends them to us. My understanding that Mr. Winkleblack filed for the two properties that you're aware of last week, so I'm anxiously waiting to get the applications in our hands so that we can set up a time frame for review. What I hope to do, too, is I think Ames and Gilbert staffs have agreed to that flowchart that we designed and the board reviewed. I'd like to get that out to the development community this week. I mean, definitely by next week if possible. I mean, the sooner the better on that, because I think once we get these two in, we may be seeing a lot of others come in, too, to amend the Ames Urban Fringe plan.
Can you talk me through just a minute with Chuck's projects? It seems to me that he entered the process, but in Ames' mind didn't really enter the process, kind of was in pre-process and then had to re-enter, in his mind anyway, re-enter the process. Is that the way this is going to work, or have we cleaned that up a little?
I think from now on, I don't think it'll ever happen. I'm optimistic that that won't happen again. With those two specific applications, in our mind, how we're going to go forward, the next step is to go to the Planning and Zoning Commission after a joint staff report is developed. The respective Planning and Zoning Commissions, I don't see any need for you to come back to him, for him on those specific projects to come back to you to say, yeah, we'll agree to that. They've already submitted the official application and good to go. And that's,
as a reminder to us, those two projects deal with the Oaks Golf Course and the retirement community, right, that we were talking about on George Orson Carver.
And that's really why I want to get that attachment A flowchart out sooner rather than later, so that it can reiterate again that this is the process that should be followed. Floodplain Task Force meeting, this is the joint work underway with Iowa State and City of Ames. We met with the sounding board, just local residents from Iowa State, Story County, and Ames to hear a rainfall, basically a rainfall prediction presentation, and have them tell us, is this the type of information the public would like to hear and learn from and be a jumping point to give us comments on flooding and floodplain regulations. There were some suggestions. Now what we're doing is the task force is taking that. We're going to frame the presentations, and hopefully we'll be having some workshops in the month of May, which we're now in May, but by the end of June. One would be the expectation in Story County, and led by me, would be hosting two sessions. One would be for countywide residents, but mostly flooding in the Squamish. But any countywide resident could attend. We'd probably hold them at that one at McFarland Park. The other workshop would just be for the first responders, and we would probably hold that here and working with emergency management. As I get those dates cemented, I'll let you all know. And first step is to really develop the format of the presentation, the workshop, and we'll finish that this week. Also, the RFQs, requests for qualifications, that were sent out from Ames regarding the detailed flood study for the Squamish, reiterating the study that was done in 1997. We received 8 responses to those RFQs, and so by May 10th, a committee has been formed to review those. I'm on that committee, and then we'll hold interviews with selected firms May 23rd and May 24th. We've transitioned to our summer hours. And that means our office is now open from now until the end of October, beginning at 7 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., Monday through Friday. If you'll recall, last year we just did Monday through Thursday. We were able to actually set up that Charlie, his day off with the two planners work 10-hour days. His day not in the office is Wednesday, and then Ryan's is Friday. And so that allows us to work those 5 10-hour days. And we'll do everything, but we will not schedule inspections after 5 p.m. That's too tight to get out there and get back with a county vehicle. Next Tuesday, we'll be bringing changes to land development regulations to you. It's kind of a two-part. One is our annual cleanup. Two, it's the recommended revisions to a 35-acre minimum is included in that. Just some quick things. We've had some concerns from Martin Marietta with hours of operation, and so we're going through the original conditional use permit to see what conditions have been applied or should have been applied and have not been, or if there's any misunderstandings of what conditions are actually available for us to apply to that property. And you as a board will be seeing a zoning permit on that site in the probably next 2 weeks. For a temporary use of the site by the stockpiles for the asphalt that's being milled off with the U.S. Highway 69 project. Howlett's would like to store the material there rather than at their plant inside city limits. And Mark Marietta has agreed to that. The next stage is for you all to approve a permit. Just quickly, permits, I have to do my due diligence and let you know where we are this year. We've done 13 ag exempts year to date. We've issued 8 notices of violation, and all 8 have either been for failure to obtain the foundation location inspection or to get the proper permits in order. So I think we need to, that's an eye-opener, that we need to be doing a little bit of outreach to make sure that people understand you have to have your inspection before you pour. It says it right on the permit. We tell them at the counter when we meet with them, but we still need to somehow get that message across. It might also be symptomatic that our fines are still not enough of a concern to people that they go ahead and pour. They're $100. And so we may be revising that or coming back for you, before you. We've issued 8 new E911 addresses, 3 new replacement markers. Year to date, we've had 7 applications for floodplain permit applications filed, and that is an increase over the past years for that first quarter of the year. 5 year to date property research requests, so that's on the upswing again. And then in April, we issued 17 preliminary development permits for zoning permits. One single family dwelling was included in that. In comparison, we issued 10 in April of 2011. So we're seeing an increase in the amount of zoning permits again. 8 were issued in March 6th last year, the same time period. Enforcement, we are right now operating on a complaint basis, and it seems to be right now the majority of our complaints are dealing with fences again. And so a lot of our time is our staff is going out reviewing these fences, making sure the best side is facing, etc. And then we have an issue that Paul has been working with us on for enforcing that. That will continue to take a life on. And as it progresses, I'll update the board. Then some upcoming training opportunities. COZO, our office, 2 of us will be at County Zoning Officials May 9th and 10th, and I'll be presenting on floodplain. We'll also be doing the Iowa State GIS and census training later in May. I gave you a sheet that says the community rating system. I'm going to give you a heads up because, Wayne, actually I will need your signature on a form on this and travel request. But the community rating system we've been talking about for a couple of years, they've totally revised the format of the manual, and so the guidance I was given was hold off till this comes out to apply and go forward. So that's been the delay on that. I'd like to go to this training in Kansas City in September. As an opportunity. This is the same training that they do in Maryland, but it'll be a lot closer, and so I'll be bringing that up for consideration by the board. And then lastly, we hope to have Connect Iowa come up and present to you all on May 22nd. We'd heard from Rick that was a good day. I'm not sure if Charlie had heard from the entire board, though.
Usually when they make that notification, they should have checked the other 2 calendars, and so usually that's a good date for all of us. Otherwise, he probably shouldn't have said he was available on the 22nd. Right, Rick? You didn't check.
I was speaking for me.
You didn't check this? Oh, shucks.
I'll let you worry about Wayne. I'll worry
okay,
about Rick.
I'll better check. But I think the 22nd looked good. I didn't bother to respond, yeah.
Okay, and the last three things coming forth to you will be the finalized guide to rural living. We'll get that done in the next couple weeks. And development brochure, we haven't updated it since 2009. We really need to do that. And then I think it'd be worthwhile in a future meeting. We've had some questions of our staff, what's happening with the CPAT report. You all had some questions a couple weeks ago, maybe to brainstorm what your expectations are of our department in that regards, especially since some of the other projects will be coming to an end, like the Government Restructuring Committee.
Well, and that, to me, that's been the holdup in my mind, is knowing how spread thin you and your department are with this Government Restructuring Committee. But as soon as we're done with that, we're going to have to get back on the local foods, which I was glad to see you bring that forward, and the CPAT. So no rest for the weary.
Questions?
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, moving on, liaison assignments, committee updates. This was the fifth week, so I don't know. I didn't have any, Paul.
As you guys know, our search for a new IT director continues. And we have enlisted the assistance of Alliance Technologies. They've identified four candidates that they think probably have the technical skills that we're looking for. So as soon as Alyssa gets back, her and I will be all over that to try to get something moving. They've also got they've also offered if by the time Sandra's ready to retire and we haven't filled that position yet, they've got some temporary assistance they can offer us. And they can also offer some assistance in locating a good candidate if these four that we have don't seem to work out. So we do have some options available.
Did he mention anything about the CLIP? I know they had a meeting with the CLIP provider. Are we making any headway on that?
I haven't talked to him about that. It's mainly been emails back and forth since I was gone here last week. But, I'll touch base with him about that.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Okay, other reports, none. Under personnel action, board, please add the reevaluation of positions in CLP effective 4/30/12 for James Reynolds at $11.25 an hour. Again, reevaluation of position in CLP effective 4/30/12 for James Reynolds at $11.25 an hour.
Noted personnel actions with the noted changes.
Second.
Moved and seconded the approval of the personnel action with noted changes. Hearing no further discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. On the consent agenda, board, we have a couple things. Item number 13, under road closure, we need to add numbers 12, 49, 1250 and 1251. Also, I'd like to, before we take action, since Mark Jackson is here with the Economic Development Group, Mark, would you like for us to pull that and end discussion, or are you good to go? Okay. It looked like we didn't have any questions, right? So with that, that's the only changes that we have is the addition of the road closures board.
Move approval with noted changes.
Second.
Been moved and seconded the approval of the road closures with noted changes, of the consent agenda with noted changes. Toot?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Consent agenda is adopted. And now, thank you, Merle. We are now to public comment number two. This is comments from the public on items not on the agenda. I'd like to welcome back Merle Eggers. I believe the topic is gravel.
Oh.
I had you sit a while this morning, huh?
I don't know whether I should do or just have the Manats come up and take all the gravel that I've got out there. I've been trying for years and years and years to sell this, and I can promise you that all the gravel you ever buy is not going to be as good as the quality of the road gravel that I've got. And this is cheaper than anything you've ever bought. And now Igor Brezhnev, he's one of the big college most of you know him. And he says he's never seen a better product in the whole countryside, and he's ran all over the whole country. Now, why cannot I sell that, and it's my own property, and just the way this is, and cut out all the politics? That's all I've got to say.
Well, thank you, Merrill. I know this has been an ongoing issue with you for a number of years, and I appreciate your persistence. There are processes that are in place that we have to follow, and unfortunately, I don't see how we're going to be able to waive that process.
Okay, then I can go right ahead and sell the whole works to Manats.
Yeah,
thank you.
And I'm going to address this with Merle. Well, I know we can't take any action here, but Merle, I've been in your house at least on a dozen different occasions, and I have walked through time and again the process that you need to go through. I've gone so far as to set meetings for you with people who can help you through the process. I've explained again and again that you're in a situation right now where the Board of Supervisors don't have any control. Even if we wanted to buy your gravel, we cannot do it. You've got a Board of Adjustment opinion against you that you've got to get past. I've given you two options for the ways you get past them, and you won't schedule a final meeting with me to go ahead and make a decision on where you want to go. Now, I have tried to hold your hand and walk you through this, but when you come up here and you get after me because you can't do what you want to do, when I have walked down this process again and again and again with you, it's frustrating. I've told you exactly what to do. I've met with our assistant county attorney to talk through what your options are. I've set meetings for you with other attorneys in town to try to help you through the process. There is a way you can get this done if you want to, but it's not as simple as coming up here and talking to the three of us. We don't control it. We could sit here. We could say, oh, Merle, we want your gravel. We don't have that authority. You have the opportunity to take care of yourself. I've told you what you can do, and it's time for you. And as I've told you, I don't want to just meet with you anymore. I want to meet with you and your son. I want to meet with other people so that we can try to push this thing down the road. What you don't get is, I'll speak for me, I'm pulling for you. I've been pulling for you all the way through. I firmly believe that Paul and Wayne are pulling for you. We're limited on what we can do. So I'm here for you anytime. But I'm ready to meet with you and your son. I'm ready to meet with some other people so that when I tell you what steps you have to take, those steps actually get done rather than you just coming back here time and again frustrated because things aren't happening. We don't control it.
You mean I've got a farm out there and it's my property and I cannot sell it?
The way it stands right now with the opinion coming down from the Board of Adjustment, you're stuck until you get that set aside. That's not our decision.
You can sell your property.
Why can't I sell all of my beans and my corn and all that? How can I sell that right to the elevator? I don't have to go through no troubles. All this is politics.
If it was politicians making the decision, you'd be right. But the problem is, it's not politicians who are making the decision. It is the Board of Adjustment who made the decision. That's who you've got the beef with. That's what we can deal with if you so choose. You've just got to make the decision. You keep coming like this is our decision. This is not the Board of Supervisors' decision. We didn't make the original. Well, it wasn't us on the board. That board did not make the original decision. And this board can't overturn the decision of the Board of Adjustment. You can fight it. And like I say, how many times have I been to your house and sat in your kitchen to talk this through with you?
Many times.
Many, many times. And I'm willing to do it again. I just am getting frustrated it's like I'm speaking a different language, Merle. I've written it down for you what we have to do. And all you and Norm have to do is make the decision of which direction you want to go. That's all you got to do. And then we go with it. But we're not getting there, and clearly you're getting more and more frustrated. And I'm going to tell you, if it was my property, I'd be frustrated too. But you have the power in your hands to make a decision and take action, and you just have to do that. That's what it comes down to. Now, I'm here for you, but I'm frustrated when you come up here and you tell me off for something that I don't have any control over.
That is a, oh my God. You go out and you work yourself to death all the time and keeping a decent farm and everything else, and the river up there, Skunk River, we fixed that so it don't take out any more water or anything. And now I can't sell my gravel that I got on my house. It's the same thing as if I set beans and corn and anything else to there, and I don't need to go through nobody to do it.
Right, but what is it about? It's not our decision.
It's a third. It's a different product, and I've got plenty of it on there. In fact, the guys out at the college says that's the best, finest stuff that there's on the market today, no matter what you do.
Well, Merrill, thank you again for coming.
It's a lot of politics, and I
don't know how we could add any more to what Supervisor Sanders has said, and he's willing to work with you on it. Okay, announcements from the supervisors. Anything?
Pass.
Okay, pass.
No,
Board, I think we need to entertain a motion to have a temporary recess in order to go into closed session, and that will take a few moments for us to be able to do that. But rather than adjournment, I think just a motion to recess would be appropriate. Then we will need to go into closed session by following the code.
I've appreciated Lucy sending us the process to go through. But, Steve, I was hoping you could come up for just a second and take us through. This is our first closed session for at least two of us. Just take us through where we are, what the process is, and why we're doing
it. I think what we should do at this point, if I had the board's pleasure, is I'd ask for a motion from a board member to go into closed session pursuant to Iowa Code Section 21.5 sub 1 sub C. For the purpose of discussing strategy with counsel on matters that are presently in litigation, where litigation is imminent or where its disclosure would be likely to prejudice or disadvantage the position of the government body in that litigation. So at this point, I guess I would ask for that sort of motion. At that point, then we'll ask those persons not involved in that meeting to clear the room, and we'll begin to make our record on the closed session.
And so that I'm clear, we're going in, if in fact motion is made, we're going into closed session to discuss a pending legal matter or something
right.
that could...
That's right. That's right. The motion should...
21.5C.
And I just want it, yep. And so I will make that motion that we go into closed session pursuant to Code Section 21.51C.
That's correct.
And we need a second. It's been moved and second that we go into closed session.
Mr. Chair, we will need a roll call vote on that.
Yes, per Iowa Code 21.51C. And Supervisor Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. We will now ask the members of the party to vacate the area, and we will go into closed session. We do plan to come out of closed session and reconvene after closed session is over.
However long it takes. I don't know the conversation we're having.
God.
Are you ready? Okay, at this time, I would like to reconvene the regularly scheduled board meeting. It is now 12:57 on this Friday, whatever the date is, the Tuesday the first. Okay. With that, we have held a closed session, and now it is opportunity to ask the board if there is a desire for any action or deliberation based on what we had entertained. So.
Okay. Well, we've had a presentation here from ICAP. From attorneys associated, county attorney, and the board has taken the matter under advisement, as I understand at this point. Between the closing of or the adjournment of the closed session, the opening of the open session here, the board has not deliberated or considered the matter in any way. We just simply take care of the technical aspects of reopening the meeting here. At this point, I think before the board can take any action, we would need a motion on the floor to do so. I think the board is, by my reckoning, understanding of the situation before it and is ready to proceed in the way it feels necessary. If there's any questions or comments toward me, if I can assist you in more guidance in getting that done, please let me know.
And I just say I'm appreciative of what was shared with us in the closed session. I'm appreciative of the advice that we've gotten on a pending legal matter. I see no reason for us to take any action at this time.
Do we need a motion for...
No, okay. No motion for no action is needed.
No motion. So.
I'd move adjournment of the meeting.
Basically, I would concur, and I would second that motion. And so all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Good.
Go get yourself some food there, Wayne. Yeah. Don't want to see you waste away to nothing.
What if something happens to you?
Vice chair.
Oh, all right.
Yep.
Probably do that again this year.
Yep.
Oh, okay. But how do I...